This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
The name Bragi came from the Norse mythology.
He was an Apollo-like god in the Norse pantheon.
Bragi is the god of poetry, and he's a wordsmith and a teacher and an exemplar, a peacemaker.
A peacemaker in a warlike tribe.
Even Loki is nervous about crossing paths with Bragi because he could be talked down.
He was the husband of Idun of the Golden Apples, and we always associated Bragi with Golden Apples for that reason.
He's a powerful figure and a gentle figure.
We loved the name, and we had never heard it applied to a child before.
Hello, Hitchhiking Off the Map. Journeys, changes, risks, discoveries. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller. From our studio in Sebastopol, California. And what have we been doing around here?
We've
been making plum butter and making phone calls and picking up the windfall apples that aren't ripe yet, but they're still all over the back deck.
Computer glitches.
Yes, taking care of a number of computer glitches and finding the stuff that I forgot about for the last 2 weeks in the back of the fridge and putting the laundry away and yada, 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 yada. It's all that stuff. And the reason I'm saying all that, okay, is that when we're telling stories about changes that happen in life, it's easy to forget that during all of that, everybody still has to do all those basic things. We have to think about the meals and the laundry and all that other stuff that's part of life that makes it real.
And today, we have two stories. Both of them came to us from listeners. And you could say these are about, well, very simple trips with large consequences. The first going on a picnic, the second walking from the street to the porch. Or they're about terrible loss and grief. Or they're about love and trust and finding connection and healing. What you hear in them is in part what you bring to the hearing. We'd like very much to know what you hear.
First story, Jeff and Pat and Freya and Bragi.
Jeff and Pat Winters live about 20 minutes up a steep, bumpy, winding, beautiful road in the hills outside Healdsburg, California. Pat's an MD psychiatrist, Jeff's a carpenter and jack of all trades. Very different people, with a huge circle of friends.
We met through a dating service.
I like saying he picked me out of a catalog. He told me he loved love, and he's a good cook.
And I was willing to date a psychiatrist.
Two big issues right from the beginning in our marriage were that Jeff wanted children and I didn't, and that I wanted to live in Northern California and he didn't. And obviously, we both changed our minds.
Yes, I love living in Northern California. She loves being a parent.
I love being a parent. Once we finally got around to having children, it did take me a couple of years to get my mind right. And by that time, I was in my late 30s. And I had several pregnancies that didn't take. And when I was pregnant with our son, Bragi, I was 40 years old when we moved up here, and he was my first. My son was born at home, and since I'm a physician and was 40 years old, I had some trouble finding a midwife who was willing to do that with me. But I had my sisters and my husband and my midwife and her assistant in attendance, and they were the only folks there, and I did it without anesthesia. It was not a particularly terrible birth, and actually a very joyful time for our whole family.
And it was amazing, powerful, exciting, frightening. Have to throw that in a couple of times. And it was just an incredible time, an incredible moment. And we cleaned them up and
all fell asleep.
And the midwife said goodbye and they left. And then it was three, just the three of us. And it was amazing. We were all three exhausted. We all went to sleep. And what an amazing time when we woke up the next day and there was our beautiful boy. My first impression was just absolute joy. I was just overwhelmed. I mean, I knew I was going to love it. I knew I was going to love the space. And I was, you know, I was prepared for all the things you have to do with a baby, diapers and all the work. But I was really unprepared for the joy. I was overwhelmed really from the moment of his birth. I just had a grin that didn't go away for years.
Jeff told me that Bragi made eye contact with him right away, that he opened his eyes and looked at his daddy. It was one of the first things he did.
Well, he was a major ham. If we went to an event where there was a stage, he had to climb up on the stage and be in front of everybody. So he was up on stage whenever he had the chance. We had friends who were musicians and often went to their events. And he just felt as comfortable on stage as anywhere else.
Jeff got to be the stay-at-home dad for Bragi. I was working full-time at Kaiser when Bragi was born. And it was an ordeal for me. I didn't know that I was going to love motherhood as much as I did. I nursed Bragi for the first 2 years of his life, and Jeff brought him every lunch hour so that I could nurse him. But still, he was the one spending time with Bragi day after day and hour after hour, and I envied him that a great deal. And it was I who pressured Jeff to have a second child.
At the time, Pat's sister Suzanne was living with us, and Pat told me, you know, this is going to affect Suzanne, too, if we have another child, so we need to talk with her about it. And so at dinner that evening, we asked her, what would you think? Should we have another child? And she immediately said, of course, what if Bragi dies? Which I thought was a very strange thing to say.
3 years later, they had a daughter, Freya. A few weeks after Bragi's fifth birthday, they took a day trip to a beach on the river with a couple of friends. A shallow area, kids around and other swimmers, just an ordinary summer picnic. And the story changes.
One of the presents he'd gotten for his birthday was an inflatable life vest. And it gave him a freedom in the water and a
plenty of shallow in this little lagoon. Numerous kids were playing in there, 6 or 7 kids and at least 3 or 4 adults, maybe.
And decided to come out of the water for a while. He took his vest off. He had.
Last I remember is seeing him holding some crackers up.
Jeff asked me, where's Bragi? And we began looking for him.
Foolishly walked away from the water.
5 minutes, maybe.
And it struck me that we didn't look in the water.
No one noticed him go under the water.
All the people had left the water because they were looking for him, except for one little girl who said, there's something here in the water, as I was walking toward it. And I jumped into the water.
And there were many, many people within just a few feet of him.
Probably 8 or 10 people within 3 feet of him.
I can't believe that no one noticed him.
And I reached down, and there he was. I reached down, and yes, it was him. And I lifted him and walked over to the shore. And I remember calling for help. And a couple of guys came over.
He had been in the water too long. And somehow my professional mind and training took over. I went into action. I was very determined.
My head was pounding. My heart was pounding. And it was a couple of minutes later that the helicopter landed, and they immediately pushed everybody away and picked him up and put him on a stretcher and took him in the helicopter, and away they went. And
all the time aware of a falling away.
Child is flying away, and I'm standing on this beach going, oh my God, what has happened? What has happened?
Tremendous falling away. Falling away.
My child, oh my God. So, lights and siren, and then we arrived, and we had papers to sign. It was like, sign this, and you sign them, and then into a waiting room, and then nothing for long minutes. It turned into long hours, and I'm not sure how long we were there, 3 hours maybe, before the doctor came in to tell us that he was unable to get a heartbeat.
We held each other. The nurse gave us permission to go in and view Bragi's body, And she told us that he was beautiful, which we knew. But even in death, the emergency room people could see that he was beautiful. I kissed his lips, and I played with his hair. I crawled up on top of the gurney and laid on top of him. Not putting my weight on him, but just cradling him under me.
There was not much sense of blaming ourselves because we were in shock. And I don't think we were allowing ourselves to look for fault or look for blame that soon. That came later. And I remember telling Pat on the way home, we blew it.
We just felt so empty and dark. And our house felt empty and dark, and our lives felt empty and dark. And we were exhausted. We were completely wrung out. We wept and wept and wept and wept. We didn't stop crying for months, it seemed like. Our daughter got used to seeing us crying. When someone came over, or when we went some other place, we would stop crying for at least a little while. And that became her only respite, and our only respite, for months and months.
The self-blame began then, because it was really sinking in that he was gone. I remember getting ready for bed after we had gotten home. It was quite late at this point. And getting into bed, and it was so weird because there was no little boy to put to bed. Where's our little boy? He's not here. I remember in those first weeks, every movement being an effort. And yet things still needed to be done. We still needed to fix meals and clean the house and drive places and pay bills. The rest of the world was carrying on. And our personal world had crashed down around us.
So you're cast in a role, and you have no choice but to play it. Your only choice is how to play it.
We wanted to have our own ceremony at home. And we wanted to do it all ourselves with our friends and Bragi's friends. We didn't want to deal with the mortuary. We wanted him to be buried in a natural wooden box. We were not interested in preserving his body, quite the opposite. We were interested in having his body naturally returned to the earth. So we went through this incredibly long weekend. And thankfully, some of our friends came over and stayed with us and helped us take care of Freya because we were lost.
I think that in general, we live with a great deal of fear around death. And that because of this, we invite our authority figures and our institutions to take over when death occurs. But for us, it was important that we do it ourselves, and it was important that all the people we included in the process be among our intimate circle, our close friends, people who had known Bragi in life and who appreciated him and who would support us through the act of burying him.
We spoke to one of the friends who was there. This is Mark.
It was terrible. Clearly, when something that sudden happens to a little child, it just doesn't cross your mind that it can happen. And of course, there's kind of an irony in that. I mean, it happens every day, and especially in the rest of the world, it happens to parents all the time and always has, but we're so insulated here. And so we got a phone call, and they wanted my wife at the time to get on the phone too before they said anything. And so we both got on the phone and they said, Bragi is dead. And we just fell apart. It was just, it was so unthinkable. And then came the process of the handling the death itself. And there were, it turned out to be 13 of us that were invited up to their house, including them, Pat and Jeff. And we went up to their house, which is way up this really difficult dirt road. Jeff had gone to the coroner's to pick him up, and so he got back and there was this little bundle and wrapped in white plastic in the back of the Suburban, and we took him out, and Jeff had built a box, and we took him out and we cut the plastic off, and friends of Pat's from medical school stitched up the incisions where they'd taken out his corneas for donation. Well, when he came out of the plastic, he was gray blue. He was, he drowned. And so he was sort of a chalk clay blue color, kind of an alabaster blue-gray. And the docs who were there said that because he was a child, the people doing the autopsy had actually done a more careful job than they usually do. They'd actually sewed up the big Y incision in his chest a little more carefully, I guess, than they usually do. But he had blood on him that we had to clean off because of the autopsy. And just very still, little tiny fingers. And he was just very clearly not there. It was a body, but nobody was home. He was just very cold and very still and very blue and very dead.
We massaged his body with scented oils.
So
we wrapped him in silk.
We brought oils to put on him, and his aunt is a seamstress.
We placed him in a handmade box.
Silk that we wrapped him in, and
made from reclaimed wood.
And we gave him presents, and we told him
stories. We buried him with fruits and flowers.
Told him how sorry we were, and we sang to him, and then it was time to bury him, and then he was gone. And it was just one of the most awful things I've ever been through, and it was also one of the truest things I've ever been through.
The memorial service took place 3 days after the burial, and we borrowed the land of a friend, and many, many friends and well-wishers gathered there. There were blankets spread on the grass and parasols. It was a warm Friday, August afternoon. It was a beautiful setting, and we had a small meal afterwards. There's something about being a grieving parent. It's sort of like having a scarlet A on your forehead. Sometimes I needed to rest with my feelings and be in my feelings, and other times I just wanted to get away from them so much. I remember standing in line at the grocery store, and some transaction was taking too long ahead of me, and my blood began to boil, and I just wanted to scream, "I am in grief! I am a basket case! Can't you take care of me?" And of course I didn't. I clenched my teeth and I didn't shed a tear, but I was raging inside. And I raged at the memorial service. I screamed out loud.
Within a couple of days of Bragi's death, we made a conscious decision to make love because we recognized that making love is life-affirming. And we tried to maintain our sexual connection as best we could despite the fact that we were so emotionally torn and distracted.
Yes, that was hard, especially the first 6 months, because every time we were alone together, one of us would trigger sadness and grief in the other. We were very gentle with each other. We were doing a lot of self-blame, and maybe we didn't need to blame each other because we were both so consumed with guilt that there wasn't room to blame the other one. But I think that was part of the glue that held us together, was in the commonality of our sadness, we were not pointing the finger at each other. It definitely weakens an already weakened marriage. It probably shatters a weakened marriage. But our marriage was not weak when we lost Bragi. And the loss has strengthened our appreciation for each other and for the family that we have, in fact, created together.
Pat had started weaning Freya, and she returned to breastfeeding her and breastfed her for several months thereafter. It fed all of us. It fed all of us that she was still able to nurture Freya in this way. And Freya regressed some, as you might imagine. I remember one day, a few weeks after he died, Freya said, "I want Brother Bragi to come home now."
We used the word death. Your brother has died, and he won't be coming home. She didn't know what that meant. She was only two. But she learned. We would show her flowers that died and insects that were dead. Little children that young think that death is temporary, like a long sleep. She learned early that it isn't. We let her talk about him as much as she wanted to. She also would announce loudly to strangers that her brother was dead, which was occasionally quite embarrassing in public places.
It was a time of year where a lot of our friends seemed to be having parties. And so one of the things we did to keep our minds off the grief was to go to parties. And this was a time when we weren't crying. We were interacting with people and having a little bit of fun. We were actually able to have some fun. And I remember one day Freya going, when we were sitting around the house doing our usual moping and sobbing from time to time, that Freya said, "Isn't there a party we can go to?" Because she was getting sick and tired of us crying all the time. And she knew that if we went to a party, we wouldn't be crying. And by golly, we called some people up and found a party to go to that weekend.
As time goes on, Bragi is fading in Freya's memory, as could be expected, and he's also shrinking. He used to be a big brother, but now she's older than he was when he died. And she thinks of him as her little brother. For example, in one version of his death, she says, "I was teaching my brother how to swim." And we had to inform her that that was not the case. So she makes her own mythology. My nature is to try to fix things. And the visceral response was for another baby. I was at that point 46 years old. I knew it was a long shot. Jeff had had a vasectomy following Freya's birth, but I insisted that he have that reversed, and I pressured him to do that. It took him almost a year to get the vasectomy reversed, so it was not until I was 47 that we started trying again, and we did have a single pregnancy result from those efforts, which, of course, didn't last more than a few weeks.
But
by that time, I was...
It's really hard to let go of the dream. It's really hard to let go. It's not that we ever fantasized that we were going to replace Bragi, but we have a huge gap in our lives, a spiritual gap, that we hoped would be partially filled with a new child. And it looks like that's not going to happen. And so we are trying to fulfill ourselves in other ways.
Not everyone loses a child, but everyone experiences loss if they live long enough. And it doesn't mean that life ends or that the sweetness of life is forever gone. I think Khalil Gibran said that sorrow and joy are brother and sister, and when one is asleep in your bed, the other one is eating at your table.
And the rest of our lives have gotten bigger, and that makes it easier to bear. I'm much more sensitive now to other people's grief. It breaks my heart every time I hear of somebody dying in the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. I feel it when I hear about a family in Iraq losing family members. Before Bragi's death, I could have heard something like that on the news and gone, that's really a shame, and hardly been moved. And now I feel
we're trying to recover the joy in our lives. We find it in our daughter's smile. We find it in good food and good wine and good company. We find it in crafts and activities. We're both builders and doers and hands-on people. We're finding joy every day, somehow.
We've been told so many times that people are impressed with how we've been able to handle it and get on with our lives. And gee, they weren't inside us. They didn't know how badly we were handling it at times, of course. But we've gotten on with our lives. And I think that that's absolutely necessary to a healing process that's healthy at all, is to be able to pick up the pieces and do your things and handle your responsibilities and be present for your loved ones and be available to talk about your grief if that's where the conversation goes, and be able to get into enjoying life as well. And I think we've done both.
And sex. Good sex helps.
Good sex helps a lot.
I would do almost anything for this not to have happened, because it was so terrible, and yet I'm so grateful if it had to happen for the experience as it was allowed to us by Pat and Jeff. Because of their insistence that they weren't going to give him to some strangers who were going to pretend to be sympathetic. And it was just really true. It was profound. Well, for the next month or so, it drove me into a really altered state, like an ecstatic state. I just went into a very... I was suffused with an understanding that there was no guaranteed future, and just swept with the beauty of the world and how amazing it was that I got another breath now, or something to eat, or how the sky looked. And I would sit and I would watch a tree moving in wind, and I would realize that the fractal mathematics of that, the chaos mathematics of that, was like, it was like the language of God. It was like, people would say things like, see you next week, and I'd think, maybe. And I didn't mean that in a fatalistic sense. I meant it in an undiluted sense. And so every moment of being alive felt like this gift, just a gift. I mean, I don't personally believe that we're here for a purpose, or that the universe has a great plan for us, or that we're here to learn spiritual lessons. I don't believe any of those things. But I'm here. And I was just swept with this gratefulness, this gratitude that I'm here for however much time I get, and an amazement that that was so.
Outside Healdsburg, California, we were talking with Pat and Jeff Winters, and in Santa Rosa with their friend Mark Green.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.